And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And do we have to talk about the game this week?
No, this podcast is going to be a return to 2016 in more than one way. I mean, an obvious way is we're not making the finals. Another one is because literally a piece of equipment is on the wrong side of a COVID quarantine barrier. We've had to record this on Skype, which I don't think we've done in 3 or 4 years. So apologies in advance for the suboptimal sound quality, and apologies in advance for the fact that we have to talk about Friday night's game, which, guess what, Nick, when I did a bit of tape work to research the podcast, it was even worse than I remembered.
Yeah. I was sort of going over the game thinking, so was this over in by quarter time? It sort of felt like it.
Well, as you know, Nick, the general statistical rule is 6 goals, and it didn't get to that point.
Five is 95%.
I use 6 because then it gets above 98, 99. Like, it becomes statistically more unlikely. But we quibble. It got up to 10 goals in the third, but it got up to 50 points in the second. So in the second, it really went statistically, whichever measure you use, beyond the impossible level. But yes, it was... We were still in range in the first quarter, but yeah, it was looking pretty grim. And the irony is, in the moment, the Dylan Grimes free kick in the first, which sent me mad, because I don't watch the game with the commentary, because I'm drinking beer and having fun with friends on Zoom. They didn't even bother showing that because it wasn't even significant enough in the end result, where I was sort of losing my mind for 5 minutes. I can't believe we could win a finals match because of this ridiculous free kick. It was completely irrelevant to the outcome.
I know. Look, it set the tone that it wasn't our day, and it really... Look, the impression of a team limping to the finish line was only been exacerbated by, I think, Nank's entire body is on the injured list this week, and
it might have been shorter if they'd listed
against the Hawks.
If they'd listed his functional limbs rather than his injuries.
Yeah. The making Mummy look spry and frisky, and I know Mummy's barely played for most of the year, but. Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, there is a bit of an observation bias with Mummy that he's in all the highlights, but he didn't actually do that. He only had 5 possessions. So it's sort of the resurrection of Mummy has been slightly exaggerated.
Yeah, whereas Nank sort of ground his way to his normal output. even if he is... clearly hobbled.
Yeah, and look, CCJ was sort of credible, and we actually won the clearances overall in the game. We lost the centre clearances, but it wasn't... surprisingly enough, because the Giants are a good centre clearance team overall, and we did lose on the scoring differential. It wasn't as much of a key reason as we lost as you'd normally expect.
No, and look, we won the hit-outs handily. I thought it was a very credible... You mentioned CCJ. He just keeps grinding away in a relatively unobtrusive fashion, but he's constantly productive.
Yes, he doesn't disappear, and perhaps our standards are low on this because of Chol, but, as we just said, Mummy had 5 possessions for the game.
I think if you stacked him up against backup Ruckman, the league wide, with the possible exception of, with the definite exception of Luke Jackson, who's the rare backup Ruckman, who's a top 5 draft pick. But he's consistently kicking goals. He's winning ball. His tap outs. A solid one.
Yeah, he consistently has. He consistently has a high proportion of his tap outs to advantage. So you can actually, yeah, he's not a brilliant ruckman, but he's definitely he uses it effectively. It's like all his football; it's not necessarily flashy, but he accumulates and he gathers. And it's nice, Nick. We've already transitioned to a mild positive from the deep negative of the fact that yes, Mummy did look really good, and that was extremely frustrating. And that goal he cooked right at the end of the game, where Nankow hand passed to no one, that was painful.
Yeah, painful to say the least. Look, if we're talking about positives, it was the junkiest of junk time goals, but. Every time Maurice Rioli does something, I like it. Even if there weren't very many somethings.
Yeah, so I think it was 5 possessions overall, but he made the highlights twice for a lovely pass in boards to Bolton, and...
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah, so and that goal, obviously. So, yes, it look, actually, the scoreline flattered us because we did put a few on in junk time, but at least we did, and better than... What was coming down the train lines at us, and it was nice that happened. The Rioli is a highlight. I don't know if he'll play this round, but I hope he does. Sorry.
It could have been worse, yeah. Look, it did. In the first half, it felt like the Giants were kicking them from everywhere, which was pretty frustrating. Rioli equal 4th on Pressure Axe. Ralph Smith 2nd, which... It's good that he did something during the game.
Yeah, because he wasn't troubling the statistics, the statistician.
Well, that much otherwise,
No, it was, and that, the Giants kicked an awful goal when his man just burnt him off the wing. Mummy tapped it to him, you might remember.
Yeah, I know. He did. Yeah, Mummy did a huge tap. Yeah, the whole. Yeah, after the such promise of last week, it was a bit of a come down to earth for our younger brigade. I thought maybe Thompson Dow was the least worst of them.
Yes, but it's hard to get too excited about a 14-touch game from a young mid, but he did some nice things, I agree, but it wasn't particularly building on the week on last week's very solid performance, 20-touch performance. So look, least worst is fair, but also slightly disappointing, I think, is also fair.
I think that in the train wreck of the season, there are several, particularly the younger mid-career guys in Baker and Short, as they have for the whole season, I think they can hold their heads up high.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Short had 30-plus possessions, and I thought both Bakers, they're both very highly rated, but I thought Baker's goals stood up as being genuinely impressive, especially the one outside 50. You know, you said the Giants were kicking them from everywhere, and that was a fair comment. But Baker's one was also, he turned a 25%.
It's pretty tidy, yeah.
Yeah, 25% shot into a beautiful goal. So, yes, absolutely no reason to hang their heads. And Cotchin, who apparently did his injury in the second quarter, that's what the club said in the injury report, and still managed 30 possessions. That's pretty manful effort. Not that Cotchin needs ours or anyone else's validation, but I thought that was fairly impressive.
For a season, I think probably, you know, Trent obviously has very high standards for himself. I think it's good that, you know, he along with, I think, Edwards and Ann Curvis won't play this weekend, but I feel like he's finished on a bit of a high the last couple of weeks.
Yes, I think that's fair, and it's a nice way to put a positive angle on it. I did think, look, he's done enough that he doesn't need to play a farewell game. Look, we've all heard the rumours, and you've got to have your head under buried under.
I've heard the rumours that there was definite rumours a few weeks back, but I've heard it's more leaning to going on. Pure scuttlebutt.
Yeah, I interpreted it that way too. And it's all pure scuttlebutt, and we have no legitimate inside information, but you just, it's been going around the football industry. We're not giving away anything or claiming any special knowledge. But I, reading the tea leaves, the fact that, you know, he played 2.5 quarters with his injury. If it was his last game, he could probably play on it. I don't think it is his last game. But look, this is wildly speculative and I think a bit pointless, so I regret bringing it up now. But I still go back to my core point that it was a very impressive game given his injury. Lynch was better this week.
He was.
So that was nice. And we mentioned Rioli before, but it was another plus 20 possession game. And, you know, common theme, Rioli and Stack getting enough possession, and Stack was high teens as well. So, again, good signs. And then both, they were, again, in sort of a top third of players in their overall ranking impact, which I thought was promising.
Yeah, it was good. We really struggled for a matchup on Taranto. And it's sort of noticeable who we keep away from guys when they're really hot as well. Like you know, poor Nick Loston often feels like he gets the tip of the top. But I think that's going to be the next step for those guys in sort of getting the most dangerous opposition forwards more regularly. But yeah, I think it's been a really encouraging last month of the season for those two. And, you know, they've had very different challenges. You know, it's been few AFL footballers, Ben Cunnington aside, who've probably had more challenging 12 months than Sydney Stack. But, it's been a good finish.
Yeah, I like both those points you made. It has been a good finish, but also the point about the matchups is well made. Speaking of one-on-one matchups, is there any point at all in analysing Ryan Garthwaite's game any further other than to wish him the best of luck and his future endeavours?
I know. I did. Yeah. For some reason, Reece Conker comes to mind at the same point too. We found out today he's not getting another contract from Fremantle, and you know, his career may have come to an end. And look, yeah, he's had a much more accomplished career than Garthwaite has, but sort of the association just being really really good club men who've added something to the place.
We can talk about him more if and when what we expect happens. I will make the point just about football being hard is I watched the VFL game at the start of this year and I didn't necessarily think he was going to be a good AFL player, but if you were just asked who is one of the best players on this field, it would have been Ryan Garthwaite. Like, it's a fine line between being one of the best footballers in the nation and not in the AFL and being good enough for the AFL. And Ryan's just in that grey zone.
I know. So he's played 14 games and we've got a losing record in them, which, given that he got drafted at the end of 2016, like, yeah, he's been, you know, you have to have the guy who's your fifth or sixth best key defender, and, you know, someone who can play a role while you try and bring along some young kids. But yeah, so he's done his role, but yeah, he doesn't help us win, unfortunately.
Now, Nick, unless you want to talk about anyone else about the game, I think we've done a reasonable stint for what was, you know, frankly, I'm not going to call it a train wreck, because train wreck would at least be entertaining to watch. It was just, it was a disappointing game from start to finish. But are you done?
I'm done. Yeah.
All right. So there's a couple of things I wanted to ask you about. I've got one of your pet interests, which relates to Ryan Garthwaite and Brad Miller, which I want to ask you about. But Nick, I really want to talk about the Dave Aspie retirement, which I think it hit us all in the feels.
Oh, that's beach, honestly. Look, retirement speeches are always pretty emotional, but oh god, it's hard to imagine one that's better than that. It was just honest, and raw and genuine, and yeah, it was a credit to him. Like, and fascinated hearing, you know, that at the start of the year he knew it was his last season. Like, he's had quite a few injuries, as he said, and the club was keen for him to go on. But yeah, as disappointing as it is for us as fans, I do, you know, it's hard not to admire him wanting to go out on his own terms. And yeah, he's done that wildly successfully.
You know, I can barely remember him doing an interview the whole time he was at Richmond, and that speech was, and it was a running joke. Conrad Marshall mentioned it on Twitter, but Conrad was at the club for 4 years and never got an interview after Dave Asprey. And I'm not speaking for Con, but can you imagine, you know, getting the story of that Mason Cox game and then the redemption the next year? Like, it's great drama for a writer. And so I had this image of him because he never did interviews, and I knew Con had, he'd been the great white whale he never got to speak to. And then he speaks up, and he speaks perfectly. Like, he speaks like someone you'd pay to do the after-dinner speech. And Nick, good Lord, I've listened to that last 3 minutes of that speech where he tells the story of the Cubs, and he doesn't say this is about the fans explicitly, but it was all about Richmond fans and why playing for Richmond matters, because you get to bring this feeling to fans and you get to do this thing that's only a game, but it matters so much more. Good Lord, Nick. Such a good speech.
I know.
And you must have loved it as a baseball fan.
Look, when he mentioned about, to the players to recognise what the volunteers and the staff do for the club. Like, just, God, it was perfect. And look, I know everyone's doing their Dave Asprey tributes, but I've got a few little nuggets for you, Andrew, that I don't think other people will have in a week of well-deserved Dave Asprey content.
And look, Nick, I think I'm looking forward to them, but I think we can take a little bit of the Dave Asprey story, as we've helped popularise the Down the Line Dave nickname. Yep. We've certainly been part of that movement. We're not taking sole credit by any means, but I think we were definitely early adopters. I'm fascinated to hear these nuggets, Nick.
Okay. So three names for you. This is not an inclusive list, but to summarise some of the really unique aspects of the Dave Asprey experience, you know, in the 21st century, Marty McGrath, Dean Polo, and Dave Asprey, all three players who kicked multiple goals on debut and then never kicked multiple goals in a game ever again.
Okay, niche, but well done. Good stat.
Dave Asprey is third all-time amongst all AFL and VFL players ever for the most games played for someone who kicked multiple goals on debut and never again. He never kicked a single goal in any of the premiership years. Like, it was...
Yeah, wow.
His debut was in... Which I remember getting excited about. Was in no way indicative of the rest of his career.
Oh, I do remember that debut. Yeah. Yeah, good point.
Sadly so for Dean Polo as well, but for different reasons. As has been mentioned, he nearly went to Brisbane at the end of 2015. He'd played 7 years for 41 games. Like, that, you know, his career, you know, that's a typical profile of someone whose career finishes then. Like,
yeah, he actually
injury prone.
He went a 5-year stint after his first year where the most games he played in any season was 8. And that was almost an outlier. That's 5 years. You know, most players, injury prone players, they have, you know, it's not a 5 year gap. It's maybe 2 bad years, then they might whip off at least 15 games. He had a 5 year stint. And funnily enough, it was 2016, the awful season, where he finally found his feet.
I know, amidst the rubble, and he was in amidst of a sustained stint of us. We just kept drafting second and third round key position players in the hope of hitting on them, and we did. But gee, it was painful along the way. We'd, you know, second round draft pick on Jaden Post in 2008. Ben Griffiths got picked full round ahead of Dave in 2009. Todd Elton, 2011. Lee McBean. Like, it was all these guys that we pinned our hopes on, and it felt like almost none of them were going to make it. And then suddenly, Dave Asprey was just a rock. And you know, I don't think it's coincidence that he played. He was the other guy next to an All-Australian key defender in all of our premiership victories. Like, the, you know, it changed from Alex Rance to Dylan Grimes. But I think having someone just holding down that role, manning the biggest, baddest forwards, next to the guy who could peel off and do the daring intercepts and cover the whole ground. Like, it just feels like such an important role.
Absolutely, the sort of set your watch to him back line.
Mm.
Just sort of interesting, Nick, the to help explain a bit why he ended this year, there was two sort of things of signs of decline that were sort of notable. And the first, his intercept marking was down this year, and maybe that's partly he didn't have as good partner of crime, but that intercept marking is a key indicator of quality. And the other thing, moment I want to go back to, Nick, is in the preseason when we were playing Collingwood, and he tried to switch the ball into the centre square, and it was clearly with that kind of lairising with the football that he's probably never got over that shame of turning over the ball in the middle of the ground. And I think the wheels fell off when down the line Dave turned the ball over with a high risk kick that he's guilt was too much to overcome. But look,
down the line Dave had been hacked.
Yes, and we must pay tribute, which was very clear in his farewell video, is what a magnificent set of pipes he has for a tall man. He's a very handsome,
absolutely
well put together, still young man. So, look, oh God, it's going to be. Sorry,
it's going to be hard. Look, I was just going to say, look, and it's a week of farewells for a lot of guys. You know, the Kale Hooker hanging them up, and
Burgoyne's last game too, obviously.
Yeah, Burgoyne's last game. You know, just the value not only of and I think this is, you know, this is a pretty unique experience for us, you know, honestly, since the early 1980s of a multiple, a one club multiple premiership player for us retiring, and how lucky. Like, I've just been reading Nick Riewoldt's book, and interesting book, but the, you know, and he talks about being proud to be a one club player, and I think it is something to be proud of. But one of the overwhelming impressions I got from it was how much the St Kilda Football Club had let him down on that journey. And, you know, for someone who's a great player and gave his all to the club, and that they just failed to provide a winning situation around him. And now we're the counterexample. We're the ones who created an environment where we got the best out of our players, and the group came together and they achieved incredible things. And these guys, when they go out on their own terms, you know, having done what players dream of. Like, yeah, it's a unique experience. Well, certainly for us.
Yeah, I mean, a premiership, three premierships in short space, and especially with, you know, we've got a fairly tightly bunched age group in those later years, which is probably not that unusual for multiple premierships winners, because that's how you win multiple flags. This is going to be, it's going to be a time for reflection, but it is going to be sad. Like, next year we'll probably lose multiple premiership winners.
Yeah, absolutely.
And look, there's no guarantee, we're not done this year. We have put aside the Cochin issue, but Bash is in real trouble. Especially with the young kids coming through, which, look, let's not focus on it. Let's keep the focus on Dave. And Nick, I do have, I wanted to lighten the mood briefly, and I can't wait to watch his last game. We'll get to talk about him one more time. Hopefully his body's okay. There is a lighter issue that I wanted to raise, Nick, because this last round, there is a record on the line, and I want you to talk about it, Nick, because this is really your wheelhouse. One of your longest term, your longest held statistical streaks is that if you have been listed in emergency, you eventually play a senior game for Richmond. And Nick, how long has that streak been going for?
So by my records, and I contacted the Irrepressible Rhett Bartlett about this a couple of years ago, and it wasn't something that he'd tracked at all, but I think it's been 31 years since we had a player named as an emergency, not debut for the club, with the mighty Justin Paul from Port Melbourne. But Ben Miller is on the verge of breaking that inauspicious record, having been emergency, I think, twice. And he's on the rookie list, and he's out of contract. And you'd have to think that he's 50-50 to keep his place on the team. So, yeah.
Politely.
He hasn't been all that fit the last few weeks, but he hasn't seemingly come close to displacing Ryan Garthwaite from the team. Isn't a good sign.
No. Actually, before I forget, I would pay credit to that person who made the point on Twitter that the last few weeks of Ryan Garthwaite has probably settled for all the selection controversy before the Collingwood 2018 preliminary final, that they probably did the right thing in playing Dave, even though, as well, we all know what happened. Yeah, so, Nick, history's on the line with Ben Miller. Now, surely, if the club cared about history, that they would consider playing the poor guy after so many years on the Richmond list. So look, Nick, that it'll be a special moment, the team selection tomorrow night. So one to keep an eye on. But I think that's, look, let's face it, our engagement in this game has probably been set by the fact that because there's been a few injuries, it'll be an interesting time. It'll be an interesting game. We'll be a few kids. It'll be almost certainly a CCJ and Chole Ruck duo, which will get me excited. Not that I don't love watching Nank, but something a bit different. CCJ getting a chance for the first ruck, I'm all up for that. There'll be Thompson Down will probably get another game. RCD's a chance to play with Cochin out. What else are you looking for in the game?
Look, it won't be easy for CCJ and Chole against Segler and McAvoy. Like, they are two genuine ruckmen. It'll be an emotional game. You mentioned about Burgoyne finishing up, and he's finishing up. Look, he's certainly not the player he was, but he's still serviceable. Look, I don't... It's hard to see... Hawthorn's in much better form than us, and I think, and I certainly worry that Mitchell and Wingard will provide a bit of an edge in midfield that we don't have. But it is, I don't know, it'll be, the Hawks are very much a team in transition, and I think it'll be an easier game for some of our younger players when they're not matched up on top ten draft picks wherever you look. So yeah, look, it'll be a funny game. I'm not mad on the empty stadiums, but if the alternative's no football at all, then I'm glad they're still going. But yeah, it's going to feel weird.
Yeah, I think opportunity to learn is the best thing about it. It makes me profoundly sad that there's not there won't be a crowd there to cheer off Dave. I would almost sit in the members just to be a chance to clap him off. But you know, it's not. Considering his career, there's many other, as he says himself, there'll be many other points of triumph and pride for him. Chad Wingard is having a better season than I realised when I looked through the numbers. And Tom Mitchell is...
Yeah, he's a good player.
And look, we talked about him a lot with that silly trade rumour, but Tom Mitchell's fine. Like, he's quite good.
He's very good, yeah. Yeah.
So look, I agreed with everything you said. I just want data points on our young kids. I'm keeping with an open mind. I'm going to drink the, have a few beers while I watch it. I'll probably get some fresh tap beer from the from Temple Brewing, which is having a growler special at the moment in West Brunswick.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so, something to look forward to. Enjoy it. It's the last game of football. We love football, and I'm looking forward to one last chance to cheer on the Tigers.
Mm.
Oh, before we go, Nick, I know...
It certainly hasn't been the year that we hoped for. But yeah, I'm already... Look, I've really... This year has only reinforced how much I appreciate having the VFL, and... Yeah, totally. It's been a funny old year again.
I would just make the point, and I know heaps of Tiger fans who are death-riding what pick we get. Hoping for the better pick.
I don't know if it's heaps.
No, I don't think.
And there's a certain hardcore.
Yeah, and look, normally I'd be all up for that analysis, but I think the way the ladder is, it's only one or two spots, and it's at the point of the draft. Yeah. Like one or two spots doesn't matter that much. So,
it doesn't. I actually had a quick look at that, and it's not really. There was it's unusual, like a situation a few years ago. Where Bailey Smith was sort of the last very good player, and there was a bit of a drop down after that. And the same in when Glossy's year, there was very much a sort of a top nine, and it dropped off after that. But that's pretty unusual, and certainly not how this year's crop it looks like panning out. And you know, they're certainly still in the process of working out who the best players are. So, yeah, I just think, enjoy the football.
Exactly, and because the Saints are playing Freo, we actually don't have that much freedom of movement on the ladder anyway. No. So, yeah, I think it's I agree entirely. Yeah. Enjoy the football. Don't worry about the draft position. It's pretty much locked in.
Hope the young kids have a good game. Make sure that they... you know, chair Dave off at the end. Maybe throw him forward in the last quarter so he can...
That would be good. Good point.
Reproduce some of that debut magic.
Yeah. That's fun.
Enjoy it for what it is. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy's played in more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Pick up Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
Weston to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start! Cutting to Sloan, he's gone! No free kick, surely!
In the final home and away game of the season, obliterating the Tigers by 113 points.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won! The Tigers are into the prelim!
Tigers.